It's Christmas! Christmas Day, my ass.
I'm driving home for Christmas. Oh, I can't wait to see those faces.
An happy blooming Christmas to you and all.
Hey kids, got you all excited, didn't I? You thought it was an episode of Merry Britsmas. It's not. It's just me. Sorry about that, kids. Run the theme music!
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, it's just me and my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the Shot Range Model Air Rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. Do you want to do the interactive bit? No? You sure? Okay, fine, we won't then. Right, that was easy enough. So, I don't think I've got anything to report. I haven't had any emails. It's that time of year, isn't it? The time of year when everyone hates Jack and no one emails me. Oh! Yeah, so let's just get straight into the show, I guess. Just before we start, just want to say I've got a big old interview coming up. I hope you enjoy it. There was a little clue to who I'm talking to at the start of the show. Now, let's get on with this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Knock, knock. Who's there?
Alcohol?
Alcohol who?
Alcohol you later.
After this next boring part. Okay, so we just had St. Patrick's Day here in the States. It is one of those rare times when we celebrate another country. And it's a big deal. We have parades, eat corned beef and cabbage, and watch the Quiet Man. They even dye the river neon green here in Chicago. Now I know this is not about England, and we aren't calling it Guy Fawkes Day and wearing the Union Jack, but you guys are neighbors, and there is a Do You Hear What I Hear connection. So, I know that I have mentioned it before, but I like to watch About a Boy at the holidays. It is based on a Nicholas Hornsby novel, and it is directed by the brothers Paul and Chris Weitz, who made American Pie. It stars Hugh Grant as a spoiled Londoner who is living off the royalties of his dad's novelty pop song, Santa's Super Sleigh. It is a funny, moving story that has two pivotal Christmas scenes, but throughout the film, the single, self-absorbed Grant is referred to as a bloke. I am not naive enough to say we've never heard this term before. I mean, it's the best way to sound like a proper English chap when you are faking as one. But we don't really know what it means. Is it just another word for man, like we might say guy or dude here in America? To understand its meaning, we have to go back to the beginning. The word's origin is unknown, although many theories exist regarding where it came from. The earliest known usage is from the 19th century, where it was used by criminals in England as a term to distinguish themselves from the high-class blokes in the city. It was found in the court papers in the trial of a 17-year-old charged with housebreaking. He referred to the owner of the house as a bloke. Then, in 1839, it appeared in the book Poverty, Mendacity, and Crime, where they were recording London street talk, and bloke was defined as a gentleman. One suggestion is that it derived from Shelta, or the Cant, which is a secret language used by the Irish tinkers, or the traveling people. See, you knew I would get back to our Gaelic friends. It may have come from their words loc, or plock. And then, it seems, it just entered the language as part of the working class slang. Today, the term generally refers to an older male. So to refer to a younger guy, you might say young bloke, or something similar. Though it still is currently used, it can be more like a joking reference, and it conveys with it no particular class or status. Enough of the history lesson, bloke. We need to take down these shamrocks. We have to get ready for Cinco de Mayo. Cheers and happy Christmas.
What's happened there? Are we ignoring Easter? Or is it because Cinco de Mayo is like a foreign holiday as well? So that's why. I don't know what happened there, Bob. Are you ignoring Easter? As long as you're happy. That was really good, wasn't it? Yeah, I use the word bloke all the time, actually. Bloke this, bloke that. Yeah, it's a cool word as well. I like using it. I always remember my dad using it. It was an interesting word that I only seem to hear my dad use. You know, my mum never said it. Yeah. I guess it's a word that blokes use. It's a bloke word. Bloke is a bloke word. Anyway, very interesting. Thanks for that, Bob. He'll be back later on. But right now, he's gone, and I'm here. Poor you. Now it's time for this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Boys and girls, do you want a quiz? Do you want a quiz? Do you want a quiz? No? Tough. You're getting one. Question number one. In which South American country do children leave pan de Pascua, a sponge cake with fruit, ginger and honey, for Santa on Christmas Eve? Which country? All right, where are they doing that? Question number two. Who had the 1988 Christmas number one single with the song Mistletoe and Wine? Do you want me to sing it for you? Tough. I am going to. Christmas time, mistletoe and wine, children singing Christian rhymes with... That's enough. That's more than enough, in fact. Question number... Do you know what? I reckon I've had that question before. I reckon I have. So you should know the answer. Shouldn't you? Yes, you should. Question number three. What is the second line of the carol, Ding Dong Merrily on High? What is that? I've given it away, haven't I? You could translate it, couldn't you? Yeah, what's the second line? Easy one. Question number four. From which country were turkeys introduced to Britain by returning sailors? Which country? Easy one, isn't it? There's a clue in the question. Next one. Which film by Emma Thompson, in which she also appeared, was inspired by a 1984 Christmas hit single of the same title that took 36 years to reach number one in the charts? Goodness me, that was a long question, wasn't it? Just for you to find out it's called Last Christmas. Right, next, ignore that last bit. Next one. Père Noël is the name for Father Christmas in which country? Which? Okay, that was an easy one, wasn't it? No. Yes, it was, actually. No, it wasn't. Yes, it was. Don't argue. I'll argue if I want. Look, we're not here for an argument. We're here for a quiz. I'm not. Your quiz is crap. Don't you be like that. I'm doing the next question. What was the profession of Jesus' earthly father? Not his other father. We all know his other father. His job was being God. But what was his earth father's job? Okay? His earth father, whose name was Jonathan Kent, and his mum was called Martha Kent. They lived in Smallville in Kansas. Yeah. Well, oh, hang on. No, that's, I got that wrong, didn't I? Sorry. His earth, oh, Joseph, his father was called Joseph. Yeah. What was the profession? Oh, Jesus's. I got him confused. I was thinking of someone else. Okay. Watching Donald Duck cartoons has been a Christmas Eve tradition since 1959 in which European country? All right. So, let's set the scene. It's Christmas Eve. You're there in a European country. We don't know which. I do, actually. I already knew this one. And it's like, what should we do tonight? Should we get hammered? Should we go to the pub? Should we get in a fist fight with our neighbours? No. Let's watch Donald Duck cartoons. Okay? Where are you? Imagine you're doing that. Now tell me which country you're in. That was easy, wasn't it? Next one. The Hogfather is the 20th novel in which series of literary works by Terry Pratchett, in which the Hogfather is a mythical creature akin to Father Christmas. That makes sense? So you've got this series of fantasy novels, and one of them is called The Hogfather, and The Hogfather is like Father Christmas. That's it. Okay, and the last one. In the song, In the song, The 12 Days of Christmas, what were given on the seventh day? On the seventh day of Christmas, my true love gave to me what? Okay, right, there's your questions. Let's get these answers out of the way. So, here's the thing, boys and girls. I've not been having much luck lately with the quiz. Do you remember, like, in the last episode, I forgot to do one of the answers? And I think in the one before that. Anyway, point being, I'm recording the answers now, the day after I recorded the quiz. The reason is because I thought I'd recorded the answers, but I read them out into the microphone and I weren't recording. And I've only just realised when I went to edit it. So, this is me the next day. Here's the thing. It's Friday night. I've had a few glasses of rum and Dr. Pepper. It's my favourite beverage. I'm a little bit tipsy, but not so much that it's going to affect things. If you've got a problem with that, then you don't have to listen to it. And that means you'll never find out the answers. How does that make you feel? Okay, right then. Let's just get on with it and forget this ever happened. Question number one. In which South American country do children leave pan de Pascua, a sponge cake with fruit, ginger and honey, for Santa on Christmas Eve? Well, the answer to that is Peru, and I thought it was Argentina. I did a segment on this where I talked about all the things that get left out for Santa around the world, and I should have known better. Clearly I don't. I got it wrong. Let's go on to the second one. Who had the 1988 Christmas number one single with the song Mistletoe and Wine? Do you know what? This was the best-selling song of 1988 in the UK. And it says in the book it was by Cliff Richard. Well, I can tell you they've got it wrong because it's Sir Cliff Richard, actually. I covered that song in an episode where I had Scott Newman on and I played British Christmas songs to him and he didn't know it. No, did he know it? I can't remember. Anyway, question number three. What is the second line of the carol Ding Dong Merrily on High? It goes, Ding Dong Merrily on High, diddly dee 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 dee. Yeah, I hope you got that. No, it's actually, In Heaven the Bells Are Ringing. Next one. From which country were turkeys introduced to Britain by returning sailors? Now here's the deal. I told you there was a clue in the question, and the clue was they're from a country. Huh? So you might have thought it was like from the street just over or from like a different town, but no, it was from a different country. Does that help? It was, of course, America. And here's an interesting fact. The reason they're called turkeys is because the way turkeys look is they've got like quite an exotic look to them compared to most of the birds we have in the UK. And so people assumed when they were introduced to the UK that they were from like sort of some more exotic country, and a lot of people thought they were from Turkey, and that's why they got called turkeys. And apparently, I don't know how true this is, in Turkey they call turkeys an American bird. So that may or may not be true, but that's something, isn't it? Right, question number who cares. Which film by Emma Thompson, in which she also appeared, was inspired by a 1984 Christmas hit single, the same title, that took 36 years to reach number one in the charts? So the correct answer is Last Christmas. Yeah, and do you know what? That song, 1984, this year is going to be 40 years old. 40 years old. Holy cow. Next one. Père Noël is the name for Father Christmas in which country? Well, Père means father and Noël means Christmas in French. So the answer, of course, is France. Yay! Next one. What was the profession of Jesus' earthly father, Joseph? What was his profession? What did he do for a living? Well, he was a chippy. And if you don't know what chippy means, in the UK, that's what we call a carpenter. Yeah. Next one. Watching Donald Duck cartoons has been a Christmas Eve tradition since 1959 in which European country? Well, the answer, you should know, because I talked about this in an episode where I had my friend from Sweden talking about what happens for Christmas in Sweden. And yes, the answer is, of course, Sweden. Yeah. And they actually call it Donald Duck. But what it was a special they did that they used to have in the UK. These, pretty much every bank holiday, they'd show The Wonderful World of Disney. And it would just be clips of different cartoons. And this is that, The Wonderful World of Disney. But they call it Donald Duck in Sweden. And they show the same one that they've been showing ever since 1959. Now, they used to show those in the UK, I'd say possibly the late 90s, maybe not the 2000s, but definitely in the 90s they were still doing it. Every bank holiday they'd have The Wonderful World of Disney. But then I guess when the Disney Channel came out, then maybe they stopped showing it on BBC. Yeah, anyway, next one, what are we up to? The Hogfather is the 20th novel in which series of literary works by Terry Pratchett, in which the Hogfather is a mythical creature akin to Father Christmas. That is the Discworld series. Yeah, I've read all the books in the Discworld series, and I really enjoyed them, but they always seem to tail off a bit at the end. I'm never that impressed with the end. I'm not going to go into it. Anyway, if you've never read the Discworld series, worth having a gander at. And the final question, in the song, The 12 Days of Christmas, what did my true love give to me on the seventh day? And the answer is an Amazon gift card. Yes, but do you know what I spent that Amazon gift card on? I'll tell you, I spent it on Seven Swans Are Swimming. There we go. That was your 10th question. Do you want to know what I scored? I'll tell you, I got 9. Because of that blooming Peru question, which I was sure was Argentina. So yeah, would have got 10, only got 9. I don't know how you did. Do you want to tell me? Yeah, tell me then, I'm listening. Ah, there we go. Okay, hope you enjoyed that. Now let's do this. Right, no messing, kids. I'm getting straight into it because this one is a blinder. How do you know a snowman is annoyed with you? He gives you the cold shoulder. Yes! Pow! Merry Christmas! God bless us, everyone.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Now, boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is one I went to see at the theatre. Now, here's the deal. I went to see it with my wife and my girls, and I didn't make any notes because I was just there to enjoy the show. So I just thought I'd give you a brief rundown of what it was, because it wasn't just A Christmas Carol. It was a sort of updated, interesting version they had. So let me set the scene for you. It starts off and you're at this Dickens experience. This is modern day. It's the Dickens experience, and you've got all these people, like tourists, that are being shown around by the tour guide. And there's this one guy, and he's like, yeah, well, I think Scrooge was really cool, you know? He was just out to make some money, just like we all are. And the tour guide is like, I don't think you understand. And I hate to admit it, I can't really remember how it happens, but they go back in time. Just him and her, him and the tour guide, the rest of the tour, I don't know what they've all gone home. They've gone to the gift shop. They bought themselves a cuddly toy Scrooge. It's lovely, it is. Yeah, they put it on the mantelpiece when they got home. Anyway, this guy, him and I spoke to the wife about it. She couldn't remember either. We both sat there. It was only like, what, was it 3 months ago? I should be able to remember. I can't remember it. So they've gone back in time, and they're, well, I say back in time. It's not even a true story, is it? They've just gone to Dickens' story. They're there. And the whole thing is A Christmas Carol. There they are, doing what they do. Bob Cratchit's doing Bob Cratchit stuff. Scrooge is doing Scrooge stuff. Tiny Tim is doing the Ghost of Christmas Past stuff. Just kidding. Tiny Tim is doing Tiny Tim stuff. And the whole time, you've got this tour guide and this guy, whose name is Ben, he's there watching it all. And as it progresses, he starts to realise that Scrooge was a git, and maybe it is nice to be nice to people. And that's pretty much it, really. The ending's fantastic because he ends up back in modern day and he's walking off, and then he suddenly thinks, oh, actually, I want to have a quick word with the tour guide. And he runs back into the museum and there's some guys sweeping up. He's like, oh, I wondered if I could have a word with the tour guide. And they're like, we don't have any tour guides working here. Ooh, eh? You see what they did there? Clever. It was a youth production. I suppose some of them might have been early 20s, but I'm pretty sure most of them were like teens. And it was great. It was really good, won't lie to you. The singing, not fantastic, but it was good singing, you know. Then the sets were fantastic. The outfits they were wearing were good. The special effects with the ghosts and that, all really good. And both my girls, Robin and Juno, who are only 5 and 8, they both really enjoyed it as well. So, all in all, that's a version of A Christmas Carol that I watched. And you probably never will. If you want to see it on YouTube, you can't. I just wanted to share it, really. I thought it was an interesting take, the way they were trying to modernise it. They didn't even modernise the story of Scrooge, though. They just showed how it could influence someone in modern day. I liked it. It was good. Yeah, I've already said that. Do you want me to say it again? I'm going to. Are you ready? I'm going to do it. It's coming now. Ready? It was good. Now let's do this. Hey Bob, gotta say buddy, you're looking great, as ever.
Thanks, Jack. I know, deep down, we all want to do good. You can say this instinct makes a segment like Smile of Joy unnecessary. The problem is that daily life intervenes. We all need to work, cart those kids around, prepare meals, organize for the next day, and so on. And then when we try to insert making a positive impact on the planet somewhere in between, it all gets a bit overwhelming. This grind can often snuff out that Christmas flame burning inside us. Well, don't let it. Give yourself a break and make this a game. There are all sorts of sites and places to find big lists of good deeds. Pick out the top 12 that most appeal to you, or maybe the 24 for each episode of Total Christmas. Throw them in a hat and pick one out once a month, or after you listen to Jack. Involve your spouse and kids, and everyone should have to accomplish the good deed within the next 30 days or before the next podcast. Make it fun. Keep track or have a chart, and it can be a competition with a prize at Christmas time. You'll make a difference and feel great at the same time without any pressure. If you know of another fun way to spread a guilt-free smile of joy, you share it with Jack and he'll tap me with his arms around the world.
You know, every time I listen to that segment, I think, well, I've got to start doing that. And I have tried with the compliment thing, which is a bit tricky because, you know, I'm a middle-aged man. And if you're giving compliments to people left, right and centre, they're like, oh, what's up with him, slimy git? Sometimes, I don't know what people are thinking. I can't read minds. But then that one, you think, yeah, that's what, fun for all the family. Just got to get off my backside and do it. Fantastic work, Bob. I really appreciate that. I really like this segment. I just think it's a joyous one. Even if you don't take it on, maybe it will create a little spark inside you that you do want to do nice things. I've got to do it. I do it every episode. I've got to plug Bob's podcast, Festive Foreign Film Fans. The latest episode is about an Irish one, you know, because it's been St. Paddy's Day. Blinding episode. Really good. And it makes me want to watch the film as well, which I probably won't. But at least it'll be in English, because a lot of them are like subtitles and that. I ain't got time to read. I'm watching a film. I can't read a book and watch a film. And I can't read a film and watch a book. I don't know. But yeah, check it out, the latest episode. Actually, I shouldn't have to tell you. I know I tell you every episode. I shouldn't have to do every episode. You should be listening to it. Now it's time for this. Boys and girls, earlier this week, or was it last week? Recently, I had a conversation with my friend Adam Parker, the host of the Merry Britsmas podcast, and we spent the whole evening chatting. Now, I've got this Zoom account where I only get 40 minutes. So we did the first 40 minutes, then we did the next 40 minutes, then we did another 40 minutes, and then we did like 20 odd minutes on top of that. Yeah, actually, I think it was 40 minutes, but only 20 minutes of it was I recording, and the rest of it was just chatting about stuff. Yeah, I had a blinding time chatting to him. He's a true gentleman and giving me all his time. I really appreciate that. We did a version of the quiz, which will come up in a future episode. He told us how he found out about Santa. That'll also come up in a future episode. But the vast majority of our chat was about Christmas in the UK. And I'm going to split it up over the next two or three episodes. And this first chunk is a chunk, kids. It's over 40 minutes of us chatting about Christmas in the UK. And why don't you have a listen to it? Here it is. So, boys and girls, this episode's version of Christmas All Over the World is set in the UK. And who better, whom better, than to talk about Christmas in the UK than the host of a Christmas podcast that's all about Christmas in the UK? I have my dear friend. I've only met him once before. That was on another podcast, actually. I met him on Totally Rad Christmas. We talked about an episode of Only Fools and Horses about 2 years ago. I have Adam Parker from the Merry Britsmas podcast. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Jack. How you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. Finally, I think years ago when I first started the pod, we sort of emailed each other a couple of times and nothing ever came of it. And here we are, look, 4 years later.
I know.
Older and more handsome. And now
precisely.
Now we're
finally have to mature and develop as podcasters to perfect the art.
Yeah, that's it. I've definitely done that. Yeah. We're going to just talk, boys and girls, just about Christmas in the UK, and you'll get a taste of what it's like. So first up, I just want to talk about Christmas Eve. What do you do Christmas Eve, Adam?
Christmas Eve, I think, well, it's changed a lot as I grew up in the UK. So obviously, you know, as a youngster, it seems quite traditional and stereotypical in terms of, you know, I'd go and see family. I'd visit aunties and uncles sometimes on Christmas Eve. I would then have a sort of, you know, family evening. The sort of highlight of the evening when I was a kid used to be getting new pyjamas for Christmas Eve. I don't know if you've ever encountered something like that, but getting a pair of new pyjamas that were kind of, sometimes they'd be linked to, you know, for example, a Ghostbusters pair of pyjamas or a Power Rangers pair of pyjamas or something like that that I was particularly enjoying that year. And that would be my Christmas Eve new clothes to kind of welcome Santa, I suppose.
Yeah, do you know what? I've just realised, I think our sort of childhood Christmases are going to be quite different because I'm about 20 years older than you, I think. No, I'm not joking. I think I am. So, yeah, this the whole pyjama thing, I think, is more sort of since the turn of the century, sort of around that time, like maybe 90s time, whereas I was a kid.
This was 90s, yeah. This would have been
I was in the 70s and 70s and 80s. So, don't know. It wasn't really a thing, the pyjamas, but it's good that you brought that up because, yes, that's something that I don't know if I think we might have done it for the girls. I'm not 100% sure, though. But I know a lot of people do. Christmas pyjamas is a big thing these days, isn't it? And the Christmas boxes. Do you get your kids boxes?
I don't have any kids. No. Okay. But my nephews.
I made a fool of myself.
And my nephews would have Christmas boxes. They're a bit more too grown up now for it. But when they were little, they'd get a Christmas box, which would be filled with bits and bobs, like, you know, a selection box, a Christmas selection box, a couple of little toys, maybe a game to play on Christmas Eve, something like that. They used to be in the box for my nephews. And so then if we saw them, we'd play games and stuff with them.
That was from their parents, though, yeah?
My sister and her husband, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think, do you know what I'm thinking? I don't think we've done the Christmas box thing. We sort of all sit around and we have a nice evening together and maybe a cocoa, which isn't something we normally do, or hot chocolate, which we wouldn't normally drink, but, and, you know, put the stuff out for Santa. What do you put out for Santa?
It's a mince pie and it's a glass of sherry. That was always...
Is it sherry?
What
went
out. Glass of sherry and a mince pie. And I'm you know, somehow my mom loves mince pies and sherry as well, just a coincidence, but two of her favourite things.
I think when we were a kid, we used to do mince pies and sherry. And I remember one year when my brother, I think, was still a believer, I went in the living room and the mince pie and the sherry was still out. So I don't know what I did with the mince pie, but I remember I chucked the sherry in the fireplace. So just pulled it out in there. So I saw it was thinking about it. I could have just drunk it. Sherry tastes awful. I've never liked sherry.
I've never did until I tried it for the first time last year or the year before. And I was like, oh, it's okay. I mean, I wouldn't say it was a game changer for me in terms of drinking, but I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
Yeah, maybe I'll give it a shot then. We do milk and mince pies and obviously a carrot, but we never left a carrot when I was a kid. I think the carrots.
No, I don't think we did. No, I think my nephews did have that, but yeah, I don't remember having that in the 90s as like a carrot was a thing. Not at all. We have as well, we have another weird tradition that I think it's just my family, but my It started when we were quite young. My mom and dad, well, my dad usually cooks a butt of pork on Christmas Eve. And then we have like pork, sort of almost like pulled pork sandwiches on Christmas Eve. And like, again, family might come around and come and just help themselves to a sandwich with like gravy. And that was quite like our Christmas Eve dinner kind of thing.
Yeah, no, that's not something I'm familiar with. So what about like as a teenager or like a early 20s in your prime going out days? What would you do? What would you do for Christmas Eve then?
Well, yeah, that's pub time. That's prime pub time, Christmas Eve. It would be the local. You'd have a local pub. We had a couple of kind of locals in my hometown that we'd go to, we'd frequent. And one of those we'd always rock up to. And it would be like everyone would be there from, you know, all of my fellow at the time 18-year-olds that I knew from school or from college would all be out on Christmas Eve in the pub, yeah, getting drunk. And even, yeah, when I, you know, sort of left home and would go back home, people would still do that, meet up on Christmas Eve in the pub and have a few and catch up and get a little bit merry before stumbling home back to my parents' house for Christmas Day when I was in my early 20s, which was, you know, great, but also caused some arguments with my mom more than one occasion, I think. I was never too bad. Like, there's a couple of times where my mom got a bit annoyed at me for coming back a bit too late and maybe being a little bit groggy the next morning. My brother, when he was a few years younger than me, but when he started doing that, there was a few Christmases that almost got ruined because of his state of drinking on Christmas Eve, and more so the state the following morning, ruining Christmas morning for everyone with his vomity state, I'll call it.
Yeah, see, that was pretty much exactly the same for me. Is we'd go to, it was sort of the next village along, we used to go to the pub there, and like a herd of us would get in our cars and, well, I don't know how we'd get there, because we wouldn't be driving back, but that's what we'd do. And it would be like all the old guys from when we were at school, yeah, be in this pub, and it'd be rammed. I guess one of the busiest nights of the year, and just that's what it would be, and it'd be like a real meetup, and you'd see all these people that you hadn't seen since school. And then in later years, it was like we'd stick to, I say village, it was, yeah, our village, we'd stick to that, and we'd go to our local pub there. And it wouldn't, yeah, be quite so many people. I suppose we got a bit older, so there weren't as many people around, but we'd still, I suppose I was sort of I was probably late 20s by that point, and it was still, we'd all still be going to the pub on Christmas Eve. So in the UK, boys and girls, Christmas Eve is usually still a working day. Being a teacher, Adam, you wouldn't be working on Christmas Eve. As a self-employed gardener, I choose not to. But back then, I had an office job most of the time in my 20s. And so, yeah, on Christmas Eve, you'd work Christmas Eve. You might get a half day if you were lucky. And then, yeah, back home and straight down the pub. And I remember, do you know, I think it was the first year I ever watched This A Wonderful Life. Now, I'd always wanted to watch it, but this was before streaming and everything, and it had never been on TV in the UK. And I'd recorded it. And so I got back from, I'd watched a bit of it before I went out. But I remember I got absolutely rat-arsed, and I went home and I was puking up and everything, and yet I still made myself a cheese and cress sandwich and was sat watching It's a Wonderful Life and thinking it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen, which of course it is. Yeah, it's a big memory, and then feeling rotten the next day. But I think,
yeah, of course,
I think by lunchtime, by the time the roast dinner had come out, I was back on form, and I
sort yourself out by then. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Usually I'd have a couple of drinks before that time as well. So maybe hair of the dog would be my method of overcoming it in my early 20s. And I was young and supple enough to have that as an actual working method of, you know, a couple of, maybe a bit of, what was it, Buck's Fizz in the morning on Christmas.
Well, I was going to say, is that what you drink?
It would be around. My mom, again, loved a book, absolutely loves a Buck's Fizz. And so she'd always have that around. And I remember, like, when I first turned 17, 18, and maybe was starting to drink a little bit, my mom giving me a bit of this and a bit of that, trying it and really disliking it, but just kept drinking it anyway because it was there until eventually I quite liked it. And it became just, again, another tradition. Every year, have a few of those before, usually by midday, probably. Sort of set yourself up nicely for Christmas dinner in a couple of hours.
Yeah, boys and girls, if you're not familiar with Buck's Fizz, you should be, because I talked about it on an episode last year sometime. Buck's Fizz is... Is it Bellini? It's half orange juice, half champagne. And yeah, my mum would have the Buck's Fizz in the morning, or just straight champagne, actually. Although not so much these days. Now you don't have anything until we sit down for our Christmas dinner. Yeah. So, but going back, so you'd leave out your stocking as well.
Yeah, we'd have, well, we had like, yeah, like, it's more like a sack, I suppose, but we called it a stocking when I was a kid.
Oh, so you were, yeah, you were that rich?
Sack type thing, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Huge, and I used to have an ankle sock.
Yeah, exactly. One... Well, I had a lot of presents. I was really good, so Father Christmas was going to leave me lots of presents.
We had these sort of plastic, obviously early 80s, these huge plastic socks that you could... You know, like a huge man would still put it on. It'd be baggy. It was they were like maybe not a meter long, but it was big and it was cellophane and see through. And that's what we'd have that we'd like bring out every year. But I remember one year being really annoyed with my mum. I can't remember what had happened. Something had happened, so I just left out one of my socks at the end of the bed, and she was not impressed with me for being a sulker on Christmas Eve of all nights. Yeah. So then, so Santa comes.
Father Christmas in the UK.
Of course, yeah. Well, it's not, is it?
Not anymore. No, when I was a kid.
But you got to remember, I'm 20 years older than you. And even as a kid, we called him Santa and Father Christmas. It was
interchangeable, yeah. It was interchangeable.
Yeah, and I think it is still interchangeable as well. Like, my daughters call him Father Christmas and they'll call him Santa.
Yeah.
So then Christmas morning, you'd open up the presents.
Yeah.
Did you open up all your presents on Christmas morning? Like
not every present. Usually the first lot of presents would be the immediate family. So the presents from obviously Father Christmas and my parents, from maybe each other. So for example, you know, me and my brother might exchange presents. My mum and dad would exchange presents with each other and open the presents that we got them. And then any extended family presents, aunties, uncles, cousins, my mom and dad's work colleagues, whoever that may be, my, you know, friends from school, they would be under the tree until later in the day, usually after lunch. So after lunch, we'd sort of retire to the living room and all stuffed and sort of draped over sofas and then finish the present unwrapping in the middle of the afternoon.
So who's there? This is just your...
It would usually be, my immediate family, maybe my... sister and her husband would come over as well, depending on, because they'd alternate between his family and my mom and dad. So because she was a lot older than us, she was 10 years older than me. Oh, so when I was very little, she was still around, but even when I was, you know, starting to be a bit older, she moved out and went to uni and stuff, so she was kind of away when I was sort of between the age of eight. As soon as I turned eight, really, she went off to university, and then she'd come over with her family for Christmas Day. But for the general wrapping, just the immediate family. And then maybe, you know, my nan, occasionally, I remember a couple of Christmases where my uncle would come over, one of my uncles and his wife. Well, he had a couple of wives. I think he might have had three wives by now, but whoever was his wife that year would come over as well. But usually just immediate family,
Yeah, so for me, it was always just our immediate family, my two brothers, my mum and dad. And the odd year we might have... one of my nans. My mum had a lot of brothers and sisters, so my nan would go to one of them most years. You know, and the same with my other nan as well. So you'd actually wait to open your presents until what, after dinner then?
Was
it after the Queen's speech?
We never watched the Queen's speech, really. I mean, it'll be on. It'll be there, but no one would pay attention to it. It would just be on while we were sort of chatting or something. And that would generally be just after dinner, because we used to eat dinner maybe between 2 and 3, I suppose. That would have been around...
Oh, okay.
Prime Queen's speech time.
Yeah, 3 o'clock, isn't it, the Queen's speech?
Yeah, and then we'd be opening presents by the tree after that. So that maybe while she was having a chat on the telly, we'd be opening presents with each other and chatting about that. But all those presents would be, like I said, from non-family members or extended family. So, if my auntie had bought me a selection box or my mate from school had got me a present or something, those would be the presents that would open later on.
Got it. So here's one for you. When you were at school and you told people that you didn't open half your presents until after dinner, did you get a lot of stick for it?
I don't think so. I think my mates knew. And I think I had a friend that did something similar, that they'd actually wait till the evening to open some of their presents, like the evening, which was even weirder.
Wow. Yeah, that's so shows restraint. That does.
I think they'd have like friends, like the family would kind of all come together late in the evening after having dinners at their houses. And then they'd open presents from each other and stuff, I suppose.
Okay.
I don't remember if that included all the presents, but I definitely remember that being one of my mates at school saying that and me going, oh, okay, well, that's more extreme than my family.
Yeah, see, we still do. We'd wait till after the Queen's speech.
Mm.
And I remember being at school and someone saying to me, oh, I bet you wait till after dinner or something. And I was there thinking, Well, that's actually after the Queen's speech, but I'm not going to tell. I think I probably lied because that's the kind of kid I was where, you know, I didn't want to look like some nerd. So I'm like, no, we open ours first thing in the morning. But what it would be is we'd get one. So we could open one present in the morning from under the tree. And then after the Queen's speech, part of me, and I could have got this wrong, you know, memory's fluid, but I've got a feeling there was one or two years where we maybe pestered our parents so much that it was after dinner rather than after the Queen's speech. So that would have been nearer 2 o'clock rather than sort of just after 3 o'clock. But yeah, that's how we do it. And sadly, I've tried to do that with my girls, but my wife's not really having it. She's like, no, they still have to wait. It'll normally be in just before we go out to see my mum and dad.
Yeah.
But it's like she doesn't want to cart all the presents there to open at my mum and dad's because that's where we go for Christmas dinner. Did they come to us this year? I think they did, but I can't remember it. Was I that drunk? I think they did come to ours this year. So the girls would have had to have waited. Yeah. The girls would have had to have waited until after the Queen's speech then. On this year. Well, I can't remember. How can I not remember? Anyway, yeah.
It's sort of a patience test as well, isn't it? Like, I think when I was very little, it would be like almost as quick as you can open them. Like, as soon as like everyone get up, we need to open presents as a child. But then as I got a bit older, I remember my parents making us wait a bit more in the morning. So, you know, right, no, we're going to have, they're going to make coffee first and we're going to have a bit of breakfast, like a piece of toast or something. There's going to be, you know, we're going to sort of not just rush into opening. There's going to be almost like making a dog sit and wait for a second is what it felt like as I got a bit older. Which again, I was pretty good at. I was quite a patient kid. My brother, less so. My brother, I think one year I remember he opened his advent calendar all at once on like December the 3rd or something.
Oh, wow.
And then tried to hide the evidence in the bin in our room thinking, I don't know why he thought that would be a place to hide it considering who emptied the bins.
That's the place, isn't it? Because the fairies empty the bins.
And then one Christmas, I think he did try to open some presents, like snuck downstairs and open a couple of presents. But then I think he felt guilty and went back upstairs. And then when he went downstairs, tried to pretend that it was, oh, you know, so, like, I don't know who did it. And it was like, no one else will have done it.
Open no one else, presents. Like your presence, yeah.
Yeah. Unless a burglar came in, opened two presents, and then left. This is all on you. He was a terrible liar.
I used to love, I don't know how old I was when I stopped, but like, because the presents, they're wrapped up, you've no idea what they are. And you'd just be like trying to peer under a little bit of the wrapping next to the sellotape. And you didn't want to sort of peel the sellotape off because that would have been cheating, but he'd be trying to lift up to, oh dear, the excitement when you're a kid, you just build. And that's what I liked about my folks making us wait till after lunch, because you get all your presents from Santa and there's a lot of stuff there, there's plenty to pay with, that's like enough for a day anyway, and then to go and open more, it's just overkill. Whereas if you can pace yourself and then you've got loads to look forward to in the afternoon. Now, these days, we see the extended family on Boxing Day. So that's when we open the presents from them, from my wife's side of the family. Yeah, so we sort of get another wave of presents on Boxing Day, which is nice. So Christmas dinner then, what's your Christmas dinner?
I think it's, you know, pretty traditional. We always have a turkey. We've never gone away from turkey, as far as I can recall in my family. We haven't gone for, you know, a beef or something weird and fancy. It's always been turkey. And then all the trimmings, you've got to have roast potatoes, you've got to have carrots, generally parsnips, although for a long time I really didn't like parsnips growing up. My mom loved them. I love parsnips now. They're one of my favorite vegetables.
I do now. I was the same, actually. I didn't like them as a kid, but I like them now.
No. What else? Peas would always be on there. We'd always have peas. We'd usually have something that may be a bit less traditional, but would be quite common. My mom loved it, red cabbage.
Yes, I think it's traditional, but I don't have that common. Not as common as it used to be. I can't remember. I think we had it this year. I think, yes, we did eat it at home because my wife cooked red cabbage. Yeah, we had it and it was nice to have it because I think my mum might have done it once or twice through the years when I was a kid, but not for many, many years. So, yeah, red cabbage is something that does come out at Christmas. Carry on.
I love a red cabbage, yeah. Sprouts as well. Again, another that I hated when I was younger. I don't think I actively hated them. I just didn't like them. I might eat one or two when I was younger.
Yeah, but so now, I
love them.
I did actively hate them. And that's like, I'd actually be dreading Christmas dinner because I knew there'd be blooming sprouts there. But then at some point, my mum decided that we just had to eat one each, which I thought was fair.
Yeah.
And I didn't mind that too much. But my mum used to boil the crap out of them. So there was, you know, so there was still flavour left, but it was the worst bits of the flavour, the bitter.
Boiled water.
They were like green, but they were grey green. They weren't. These days, my wife will cook them and she'll, if she does, she'll like fry them up you know,
yeah, pan fry, fry.
And that's something else. That's completely different. But yeah, we did used to. See, these days, my mum, if we have dinner with us, she doesn't bother the peas. The only green stuff we have is the sprouts, and she'll have a big old bowl of sprouts there, which my dad loves. And
yeah,
I've grown to like them more, even the way she cooks them. So yeah,
I think that was the majority. I can't think of what, like, there'd be other things, you know, we'd have like obviously loads of gravy. My mom would usually make a bread sauce quite often.
Yeah, I think I talked about bread sauce on the podcast. Yeah. Or some, I don't know if I did.
I think you did, yeah, yeah.
I did, yeah. I think someone asked me about it. I can't remember whom.
Because again, that's a very unique British thing, I think, bread sauce.
It is. And I think I did talk about it on the show because my dad would love it and he'd sit there waiting for everyone to have a little bit and then he'd just pour the rest of it on his plate, a huge mound of bread sauce. I think these days it's only me and him that really go for it. And I do like bread sauce. Yeah, actually, I think my mum bought the bread sauce for Christmas dinner this year. Yeah. So my wife didn't have to make it, I think. Yeah.
I think pigs in blankets as well. But again, pigs in blankets is a slightly more recent thing as well. I feel like when I was little, I don't remember having them. Maybe they didn't come around till maybe my parents just didn't buy them till I was a little bit older. So I don't remember them from when I was little. But when I was definitely a teenager, I remember them and really wanting, like, loving that part of, you know, trying to get me and my brother would fight over the pigs in blankets left.
Yeah, no, they were around when I was a kid. So they've always been
around a while. Yeah.
Boys and girls, pigs in blankets in the UK might be different to how you have them. What size does your mum make? Cocktail sausage?
Is it? Little cocktail. Yeah, small cocktail sausages.
Yeah, see, my mum makes like a chipolata. So which I don't know if you know chipolata, kids. It's sort of, imagine a large man's hand. It's not as big as a sausage. And it's a bit smaller than a hot dog, I'd say. But it's thinner.
Quite skinny,
It's a skinny sausage wrapped in bacon. But the sort of more traditional ones, or if you buy them ready-made, they're normally cocktail sausages, little cocktail. Not weenie, because they're not like wieners. It is a proper sausage wrapped in bacon. Yeah, we have those. Big plate of those my mum does up. Yeah.
And then, yeah, I think that was it, really.
Do you have cranberry sauce with yours?
I don't think we did when I was younger. I don't remember cranberry sauce being around. I remember as I got older, it appearing on the dinner table. Again, but my mum was the only one that would ever have it when I was younger. It wasn't until I probably turned 18, 19 and started actually going, okay, well, let's try some foods and not be so stuck in my ways, that I'd started eating cranberry sauce. And again, love it now.
Yeah, but that's pretty much the same for me. We never had it when I was a kid either. It was it came in later on. I think generally in the UK, the cranberry sauce is sort of more of a, I'd say, modern thing, but it's not like super modern. But
I think it's transferred over from maybe from American culture a little bit.
I guess so, actually. Yeah.
The one weird thing that for a little while anyway, my dad would do on his dinner, he'd always have baked beans with his Christmas dinner.
Is that right?
Baked beans, yeah. And it was a running joke, like a small tin he'd have cooked, and he kind of keep
a whole small tin though.
Yeah, and he'd have it in like a bowl on the side, kind of thing, but would like periodically pour a bit onto his Christmas dinner plate to add some beans to the plate. He doesn't do any more. This is something we ridiculed my dad for his love of beans so much. He kind of is actively against it now and gets a bit annoyed when we talk about it. But there was definitely a while in like the late 90s, early 2000s when I was growing up that he'd eat beans almost with every meal.
Oh, so this wasn't special for Christmas.
No.
Every meal.
It was almost every meal. So it had to come with Christmas. Yeah. Well, he didn't like ketchup. Hated ketchup, but loved beans. Weird. I know. My dad had very weird food habits. It's only in the last few years that he started to, as now he's retired for some reason, he started to widen his food habits and try new foods. Because for a long time, wouldn't eat anything like pizza, pasta, curry, anything that wasn't quite plain meat and, you know, meat and chips and something like that. Or, you know, things like a roast and stuff would be fine. But beans was a mainstay. Beans was a British mainstay for his plate, even on Christmas.
I've never heard of that before in my life. That's insane. what's becoming more common these days is people going out for Christmas dinner to like a pub. Mm. Is that something you've done or your family have done?
Never done it. No, I couldn't imagine it, really. Like, I think in certain circumstances, you know, I can understand someone doing it. Or if you're, you know, maybe you haven't got a very big family. But with my family, the way it is, I just wouldn't get it. Why would I want to go out somewhere when I could, you know, be at home with my family? And I quite like, now especially, I'm a bit older, I like helping with the Christmas dinner, even if I'm at someone else's house. Like my mom, you know, and my dad, I'll help them. I'll say, you know, give me something to do and I'll take part in it. And it'll be a active thing to do as a family, kind of. So I couldn't imagine just, you know, putting some glad rags on, turning up, eating some food and then leaving.
Yeah, see, I agree. I think the reason people do it is because Christmas dinner is such an affair.
Yeah.
So much effort. They think, oh, let's just go and let someone else do it. But I got a mate, and I used to, every Christmas day in my sort of late teens, early 20s, after I'd had Christmas at home with the folks, and my mum and dad were tired and everyone else was done in for the night, about 7 o'clock, I'd head round his house. And they'd always have the most lavish Christmas dinner. It'd like put my mum's to shame. Ours was good, but this was something else. And they'd always have all the canapes and like a cheese board. And, you know, I could go around there and they had enough food left over that I could have had another Christmas dinner if I wanted from their leftovers. And I think once I did. And then one year, they decided to go out for dinner. And I remember going around there in the evening, and they'd all obviously been out for dinner, come back. And everyone just seemed a little bit more downbeat. And I think it was just because you can go out for a meal in a pub anytime you want. And unless the pub puts on like a real Christmassy atmosphere, it's just a meal in a pub. Whereas the Christmas dinner at home, I think you have that meal that you'd only have once a year at home. I know it's like a roast dinner, but there's more to it than that.
Yeah, there's extra things.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they kind of regretted doing it, and they never did it again. That was just a one-off, and that was it. And ever since then, they've always carried on doing it the way they used to do it. And I don't think I ever would, unless it was just me and the wife, maybe when the girls are older and they hate me, you know, then they've moved away and never want to see me again. Maybe the two of us might think, well, you know, let's go and eat out instead. But no, I can't see it.
I couldn't imagine
it. Not my bag at
all. And as well, the other thing you mentioned, leftovers, the sort of thing that I do think about that. Like, leftovers are one of my favourite part of Christmas dinner. Of like, you know, when I go to my parents' house, I'll take a bunch of stuff as leftovers, you know, that I'll pick up a bit of this, a bit of that, and that'll be next couple of days, sandwiches and bits to make stuff with. Yeah. Love all of that stuff. It's part of the tradition. It's part of the routine. And some of my favorite bits of what can I do with the leftovers, even especially as I'm getting a bit older, can I maybe try and do something else, like make something different with the turkey or try something with the veg, make some, recently I've started using, you know, the Christmas veg to make bubble and squeak. Christmas bubble and squeak, which again, you don't, if you go out and eat, you got none of that.
Do you want to just explain to the heathen what a bubble and squeak is?
The bubble and squeak is basically you take your leftover veg, and usually it has to be some sort of potato, maybe mash is often good for it, I find. But any leftover veg really can work. And obviously Christmas, you've got your sprouts, you might have some red cabbage, you might have some peas, and you sort of put it into a patty, kind of mush it into a patty. Sometimes my mum used to use a bit of flour with it, but I usually just use the potato as a welding unit. So it's almost like cement. Put it all together, fry it, one side, like a couple of minutes each side, and it forms like a crisp crust. And so it's just nice and light and fluffy, full of veg on the inside, crisp and on the outside, like perfect breakfast food.
Yeah, so bubble and squeak, kids, people do eat it all year round, but it's a real Christmas thing with the leftovers, like it's particularly at Christmas. Every Boxing Day, when we go out to my wife's sister's house, or they come to us actually sometimes, yeah, there's always going to be bubble and squeak there. It's a Boxing Day meal rather than Christmas Day. It's funny you say that about the leftovers, because if we have Christmas dinner around my mum's, we'd normally leave sort of mid to late afternoon, about sort of 4 or 5-ish. She'd always let me take a few slices of turkey home so I can have a big turkey sandwich when I get home.
Exactly.
Or make a sandwich to take with me. So dessert then, what would you have as your dessert?
I don't remember when I was really little, but as I was getting older, there'd be a selection. It'd be two or three options usually around the table. Quite often there'd be a trifle. I do remember there being a trifle, which I didn't like, but it would be there as an option. And I remember my brother-in-law as well, like when my sister and him started, or when they got married, so I was a little bit older and sort of into teenage years, he'd make this trifle every year. And I think he still does it quite often. Some sort of Jamie Oliver recipe that apparently was amazing, but I just don't like trifle. It's not for me. So trifle would be there.
You still don't like it?
No, not particularly. No, something about the combination of things. I don't know. I'm not a big jelly fan, generally.
No, see, I don't like jelly. If you're in the States, you'd call it Jell-O. I don't like jelly. It also has got sponge fingers at the bottom mixed with jelly. I don't like that either. But it's got cream and custard on top, and I do like that. And I've remembered it in the past, just eating the top bit. And leaving the rest,
When I was a kid, I was never really, I like sweet things, but I wasn't a big cake fan when I was a kid. I like ice cream would be, you know, something that I would have gone for. And I definitely remember my mom and dad would make sure there's ice cream always in the house usually. So I'd often have ice cream at Christmas. But my mom and my mom especially would always have a Christmas pudding. Absolutely, without doubt, a Christmas pudding.
Would she make it herself?
She did a few times when I was younger, I remember, but I remember her getting quite annoyed at making it as well. So I think she gave up eventually, and because it was mainly making it for herself. Because my dad wasn't a big Christmas pudding fan. He preferred, you know, he'd like a tart or something like that. Usually, a trifle, he'd have a trifle.
See, my mum would make a Christmas pudding. She does it every year. I've always said her Christmas pudding is the best pudding I've ever tasted. And I remember one year, I can't remember what happened. I think I had Christmas pudding around our house. And I enjoyed it so much that I went and bought Christmas pudding from Tesco's and ate it, and it was crap. I was really annoyed. And I was thinking, I should have just taken some more of my mum's. But she'll make it every year, and she'll start it really early, because when you make it, you're sort of meant to let it, I don't know what the word would, marinade? That's not the word for it, though, is it? But you let it sort of
rest.
Yeah, and because there's Stir Up Sunday, I think, is the first Sunday in December, and that's when you're meant to stir your Christmas pudding up. And she'd make it, and it would be there on top of the fridge for, like, well, 3 weeks, I guess, from the start of December till Christmas Day. There it would be, wrapped in cloth up on top of the fridge. And I remember when I was a kid looking up at it thinking, I hate you, Christmas pudding. What's that doing there? And I never liked it at all. And then as I got older, I just love it now. I absolutely adore my mum's Christmas pudding. Yeah.
Yeah, I like Christmas pudding now. I've had, you know, as an adult, I started eating it and really love it. And my wife as well, she was never a big Christmas pudding fan. And I would always have one since we started dating at Christmas. I'd make sure I got one. And then the last, it was about 3 years ago, she got one as well. And she was like, I really enjoy this now. And now she loves it. It's one of her favorite desserts, generally, even. So slowly, you know, spreading that Christmas pudding love as well.
Yeah, see, my wife won't eat it. The kids obviously definitely won't eat it. But my wife likes trifle. And I've talked about this on the show before. I think I even did a special segment. I did, devoted just to trifle. If you're not familiar with trifle, boys and girls, I'll just quickly, it's sponge fingers, sponge cake fingers, normally, or just sponge jelly or jello, as you want to call it, then custard and then cream and then like hundreds and thousands of sprinkles on top. And yeah, my mum would make it when we were younger. She didn't make it for many years. And then I think one year my wife mentioned that she liked trifle. So pretty much every year since then, I think my mum has made a trifle. And what was cool is my wife would be the only one that would eat any of it. So my mum would give it to us to take home. So my wife had trifle for the next 3 days until the cream went off, I guess. Yeah.
Would she eat my mom? So she would then have trifle for breakfast.
Oh, goodness.
Post Christmas. That was, I distinctly remember that. And I think I remember a couple of years ago when I went home, I noticed the next day she had trifle for breakfast again because I stayed over. Yeah. As a breakfast treat, she'd have a bit of trifle from the fridge.
I think it's because I don't like the jelly bit of it.
No,
I wouldn't eat it any time of day. So, but then thinking about trying to eat it in the morning seems even worse. Yeah. So what else would you have with desserts? We've got the Christmas pudding.
Trifle. Yeah, my dad would often have some sort of he quite liked like a tart or something, but of Christmas quite often, like, you know, sort of a cherry tart or...
Oh, okay. So not a specific Christmas.
No, just something that he really liked, I think. So he'd often have that kind of, he'd want to get one of those as one of his favorite things to have. And he didn't want the pudding and he didn't want, he'd sometimes have a bit of trifle, but if he didn't want that, a tart would be what he'd go for. And I think that was it growing up. Yeah, because me and my brother would eat ice cream when we were kids. My mom would have the pudding and my dad would have either trifle or a tart. And then my sister and her partner would have whatever, really. They went first. They'd have the trifle. Well, the trifle was generally what they'd have, I think. As we've, since we've grown up, my brother-in-law, he quite likes making desserts, and he'll make a couple of weird desserts each year, maybe, or try something new. You know, make some weird chocolate bomb or make some sort of... He makes banoffee cake, I think, one year. So he'll often try something new now to sort of... We often have a Christmas pudding as well, you know, just in case people want that. Usually people will, but then he'll try and make something new as well to kind of, you know, here's a new fancy recipe I found. And he's a pretty good baker, so it always works out well.
Yeah, we're pretty traditional with ours. So like I said, we have the trifle, we have the Christmas pudding, and also my mum will she'll bake her own mince pies. Yeah, and we also normally have a choice of cream or ice cream with those. So what my dad would always do, well, I suppose I did it a lot when I was a kid. I don't really like my mum's mince pies because the pastry isn't as crumbly as the Tesco's ones. But my dad would lift the lid off it, put a blob of ice cream in the mince pie, and eat them like that. The good thing with them was because they were out of the oven, so they'd be nice and warm as opposed to your mince pie you might grab out of the cupboard. But yeah, and then when I was a kid, I'd have the mince pies. And then as I got older, it was Christmas pudding. And I think I'd normally have my Christmas pudding just with cream, actually, like thick double cream. Yeah.
I had cream first. I've been a convert to custard in recent years, but cream was the go-to for many years for a Christmas pudding. Or as well, I used to have cream with mince pies, but mince pies weren't usually so much after Christmas dinner thing for us. They kind of be leading up to Christmas in the days, I suppose, maybe more of a thing we'd have as like a snack or
I think that was more of a our family thing rather than a regular thing that people would have mince pies for pudding. What about Christmas cake? Did you ever have a Christmas cake?
So I have, until Christmas just gone, I've never had Christmas cake. Or I think I did when I was little a couple of times and hated it. Yes. Absolutely hated it. And so I just went, nope, don't like that. Don't like that at all. And just gave up on it completely. Because again, something my mom likes, she likes Christmas cake. My mom likes everything really, but she likes Christmas cake. So she'd usually get a small one for her. And she'd usually eat it in the run up to Christmas. Again, it wouldn't be so much a Christmas Day thing. It would be the week before, she'd get a little Christmas cake and then have a slice every day.
Yeah, she'd buy one, would she? She wouldn't make it.
Yeah, no, she'd usually buy one. I think one of her aunties would make one sometimes. So she might get one off of her sometimes. I don't think she made it every year because I definitely remember getting one, unless my mum had two, which could have been a possibility, to be honest. But this year, for the very first time, we went and bought some Christmas cake, just like a mini small one, me and my wife. And again, I liked it. I was like, I quite like it now. Again, my taste changed and matured, obviously, as I got older. And it's good for, you know, good for my taste buds, less so for my stomach.
So, boys and girls, Christmas cake, if you're not familiar, is like wedding cake, but then where you're from, your wedding cake might be different to the wedding cake we have in the UK. It's very rich
cake, isn't it?
It is a very rich fruit cake. Yeah,
very rich.
A lot of alcohol in it. I don't know what alcohol they use. Usually, anyway. Yeah, very dark, dense, thick cake with marzipan, and then on top of that, icing. Thick icing. Yeah,
really thick icing.
Yeah, the crunchy icing. It's like pure sugar, pretty much. My mum has made one every single year. I'm pretty sure she still makes one every single year. And I always think, eating that? Because it doesn't come out till Christmas Day. I've never touched it. I don't like marzipan. No. I think that's the main thing. I think if I had some, I'd have to peel the marzipan off and then I could eat it. But I don't think I've had a slice ever. I don't think.
It is like overwhelming. It just when I tried it this year, I cut myself quite a big slice at first, just kind of like, I'll eat a lot. And then it was halfway through and like, oh my God, I feel physically a bit sick and a bit stuffed. Like I'm enjoying it, but it actually is so thick, dense and claggy.
Yes.
It's like a bit of a challenge by the time I was halfway through. I had to sort of put it down for a bit and come back.
Yeah. It reminds me of like how much I hated Christmas pudding. And then they also had Christmas cake. And it was almost like the consistency of Christmas pudding, Christmas cake is inside. But yeah, I don't know where it goes. She makes one every year, so it must get eaten. I'm sure she's not the kind of person that would chuck it away. So maybe my dad loves it. I don't know. Yeah, I guess it would last because it's loaded with alcohol.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it lasts a while, I think. Yeah.
He's probably having it in his lunch when he goes to work back in the new year. So that's Christmas dinner. What about Boxing Day? What would you normally do for food-wise on Boxing Day?
Boxing Day would be a bit of leftovers, definitely. But quite often, actually, Boxing Day would be a buffet-style food experience from growing up. And again, quite often we might have family over. I do remember, you know, having aunties and uncles come by and cousins on Christmas, on Boxing Day, sorry. It's kind of dropping in, but also spending a bit of time maybe in the evening, sort of come over and play a game or have a chat or watch a bit of telly together. And there'd be a buffet spread on the table, which will be a mixture of leftover stuff from the day before. So, you know, you'd have cold cuts of turkey and those sorts of things. And then a lot of finger food, sort of things like cocktail sausages, sausage rolls, cheese. You'd have some sort of cheese board. Or, you know, back then it would have mainly been cheddar, just a lot of cheddar. I remember definitely doing some like chips. We'd have some frozen chips as well. We'd have to have some chips on somewhere in there. Kind of a picky bit of everything. Sometimes some frozen stuff, sometimes stuff made from scratch, sometimes leftover things. And there'd always be a lot of it. There'd be, you know, the whole table. You couldn't sit at the dinner table. It would be kind of, you pick it up, you take a plate, fill it up, and then go and sit somewhere else in the house, in the front room, or perched in the hallway, or perched by the side of the table in the kitchen, because it's full of food, of various stuff. You know, little things were like, you know, chicken drumsticks, kind of anything and everything that was either left in the freezer or left over from Christmas Day. That was Boxing Day feast. And it would kind of mid to late afternoon and go on into the evening, so you'd be grazing throughout.
You know, that's pretty much exactly what we still do now. I can't really remember what it was like as a kid. I remember every year it would alternate between my mum's sister and our house, and one year we'd go to them and one year they'd come to us. And I remember one year I was probably mid to late teens, and I said to my mum, "Oh mum, are we going to Auntie Cindy's this year, or are they coming to us?" And she's like, "Well, I don't think we're seeing them this year. Something had happened. They'd argued about something, and that was it. Never happened again. It's a Boxing Day. And I was trying to think what I did in Boxing Day in the gap in between before meeting my wife, because since I've been with my wife, it's always moved between either. I don't think we did it for many years because we never had a house for the first like 10 years we were together. But it'd be one of her sister's houses. She's got two sisters, or her mum's. And her mum's place was tiny. And she'd still lay on this big spread, and everyone would be literally perched. Like you say, everyone would be perched around the house. Like, if you were lucky, you'd be sat on one of the on the sofa or the armchair. But otherwise, it's just leaning against
on the floor.
Or, or the arm of the armchair if you were lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, kids on the floor. Exactly. Yeah. But exactly the same, like you say, it was pretty much, everything and anything on the table. Always bubble and squeak, though, because particularly my wife's mum loves bubble and squeak. Turkey from the day before. Normally some ham as well, actually. It'd normally be some ham.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of cold cuts. And then different things that they do every year, which is more traditional to us, maybe, was one of the sisters would do a chicken salad. No, not is it chicken salad? A warm chicken salad. Are you familiar with this?
I think I know. Yeah, I think I know.
It's pretty much
salad. Yeah.
Chicken in something. Seem to be a lot of celery in there. Yeah. I'm not a fan. Anyway, but that is Boxing Day. That's
did you have one other thing that I definitely remember, because I remember making them and then not liking them. And again, then as time progressed, really enjoying them. Cheese and pineapple as well. We'd always have quite often Boxing Day.
Yeah. That's
because I think it was a bit of a British party thing almost, cheese and pineapple. And my sister loved it. So we'd always have it on Boxing Day as well.
Do you know what? I don't remember ever having that on Boxing Day, but that is a proper British staple party food. You get a small block of cheese, small piece of pineapple on a cocktail stick.
Yeah.
You add it with a little silver skin.
Yeah, with a silver skin onion. We used to have those as well on the table.
A little pickled onion you might have on there as well. Never had those either. Would you have pickled onions in your in your buffet, Boxing Day buffet?
One of my mum's favourites. She loves pickled onions. So that would have to be there.
She sounds really old school, your mum.
She is proper. She'll kind of sort of person that will eat anything and everything, and then has very old school tastes and stuff. I always remember growing up, just to point out her weird food habits, one of her favourite things to eat was a packet of cheese and onion crisps with chocolate buttons poured into the bag, and she'd eat them together. Chocolate button and a cheese and onion crisp together. Yeah, she absolutely loved it.
That wasn't a Christmas thing, though. That was an all year.
No, that was just her weird thing all year, yeah.
Oh, I don't know if I could try that. Maybe I'll give it a go.
I think I tried it once and didn't like it, so I wouldn't recommend it. It was just that shows what sort of, her food habits were quite traditional and weird. And I think it's because she said she had it when she was growing up. I don't know why, but it was something that was introduced to her when she was a kid and stuck with her.
Yeah, I had to cut it off a bit there because then suddenly we started off on the next subject. So I just want to say, I'm going to be saying this every episode for the next like 5 episodes. Thank you so much to Adam for giving me his time. And let's move on with this episode's recommendation. Boys and girls, this may come as no surprise. This episode's recommendation is the Merry Britsmas podcast. Now, I'm pretty sure I've recommended it as the recommendation at least twice before, possibly more, but I've frequently spoken about the show. I'm a huge fan of it. I listen to every episode and I enjoy every episode. And in it, Adam, the chap I was just chatting to, talks about Christmas in the UK. He talks about Christmas TV specials or TV episodes. He'll talk about a Christmas song, usually. Not always a British Christmas song. Sometimes it'll just be British takes on a Christmas song. And it'll also talk about Christmas traditions. And it's just a great show. It really is. If you like Christmas, you'll enjoy listening to it. I know you will. Adam's got a great style, very relaxed and very cozy listening to that podcast. I really do enjoy it. I keep saying I enjoy it. Do you know why I keep saying that? Because I blooming well enjoy it, don't I? So, yes, check out Merry Britsmas podcast. And if you want to know how to find it, just type in Merry Britsmas somewhere on your computer and it'll pop up. It's not rocket science, is it? Crikey. Right. Thanks again to Adam. Cheers, mate. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. It's been a bit of a longer one, of course, because of the interview. Next one's going to be long, I guess, as well, because of the interview. We'll see. But yeah, I really hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch, do it, man. What's stopping you? Get in touch, baby. Send me an email. Write me a letter. I'm not giving you my home address, of course. Just do your best. Yeah, get in touch. Email address, totalchristmas@gmail.com. The website is totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, You know I love ya. Merry, happy Christmas.
Happy blooming Christmas to you and all.